probably more than for broadcast right now. My name's Barbara Greff. I'm from this area. I'm from the Catskills. And welcome to the Catskills. Welcome to the beautiful Catskills. Isn't it nice? And I was president of the board at WJFF for several years, and I was also an on-air volunteer at 6 a.m. in the morning, which didn't last that long on Mondays. We didn't have local news back then, and we don't really have it now in a traditional format. Most recently, I'm a print journalist, and my I worked for the Daily newspaper here. Could you show that, Fred? That one. The Times-Herald Record, it's a daily that's about 90,000 circulation, and it covers three counties, and as such, it's stretched pretty thin. So last year, I left that newspaper, and I bought a small newspaper here, which is the Town Crier, and if you want a copy of it, you can do that. I might talk about the story that's in the one with the blue sky cover a little later, so maybe you want to look at that or just take it with you. Yes. We're two partners. We left the Daily. We bought this one. It was for sale, and we changed it quite a bit so far. It's a work in progress. So that's my background, and maybe we could just go along and introduce ourselves.
My name is Dave Goodman. I've been a reporter and an independent radio producer. This is my 21st year. I started out, I cut my teeth reporting for WBAI on the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant on Long Island, and then graduated to Pacifica Nightly News, did that for 16 years. Until the difficulties at Pacifica that we all know about. I produce a weekly radio program called Radio with a View that features a lot of local news stories. And my current project is called the Boston Community Reporters Project, and that serves a dual purpose. It's a media education center. We're hoping to hopefully in collaboration with some of the stuff that Indie Media is doing, but create citizen journalists, and it's an independent news bureau for covering Boston and New England regional stories.
My name is John Grebe. I'm a producer of a program called Sounds of Dissent that's aired for 3 years as a weekly news and political review in Boston on campus community radio station WZBC-FM, which is a 1,000-watt station reaching throughout greater Boston. And I also coordinate radio for the Independent Media Center of Boston, and am interested in connecting local news and local people's lives to global situations and global structures, corporate and institutional and government structures that affect all of our lives around the world. I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay. Thanks. My name is Keith Rosendahl. I'm the current co-news director at KCSB in Santa Barbara. Came to alternative media through KPFT in Houston's coverage of the Iran-Contra hearings. That was a real wake-up call to me living in suburbia. Very important. I attribute all my significance that I attribute to alternative media to that experience, and since then, of course. So I started DJing music primarily. I was at a college radio station, music director there, but it was 100% student run. There was no staff. That was important experience too, in terms of running a organization democratically and kind of without hierarchy or oversight, more or less. And now I went to Santa Barbara for grad school, study social and political psychology, the media psychologically, but I'm kind of a refugee from academia, and I started to do journalism, training myself in it first, and then I wrote a grant to fund the creation of a news department where there hadn't been one for a while at KCSB, and I'm in the midst of that, and that's me.
I'll sort of open up the discussion. We have two questions to talk about as far as I can see. What's locally newsworthy, and how do you do that? With who here thinks they have too small of a staff to do the news? I think that's a common I think it's probably a common experience, and I think what we have here in this tent is a wealth of knowledge on ideas. I was talking to people, a few people earlier, Cindy among them, who had some really terrific ideas. We were talking about print, but it's the same dilemma. How do you find the news and how do you get it done in a way that's meaningful to your community? I guess what I would want to say about what's locally newsworthy is there's no difference between print and radio. What you want to do is find what I call the master narrative in your community. Here is the issue is a lot of growth is happening here. There's discussion of casinos. There's a performing arts center that's going to be built. There's the road is turning into an interstate. And so what's that going to mean to us? And that is a framework to look at your news through. So if you can only pick one spot in your weekly news lineup, whatever you might have, you might want to discuss it, at least in some part of that, what I call the master narrative of your community. And then the other question is, how do you do it? That's something I haven't solved. It is a matter of picking your spots. And as I said earlier, WJFF has some ways of attacking the local news issue. Usually they are through half-hour shows where you might interview one person about something that's happening with the community. We have Community Voices. We have Making Waves, which might tackle some more controversial issues. And some of the other programs might feature local news topics now and then. But the issues are consistency. Even when I was on the board of WJFF 5 years ago, we wanted local news. But the issues were how do you do it consistently and how do you do it professionally? How do you get quality? And that still remains the issues at WJFF, because if you're maybe 60 volunteers now at WJFF, how many of them are journalists? Not too many, because if you have journalists in your community, they're probably working 14, 15-hour days already, although you might be able to get a few of those to come on the air once in a while. And without that kind of staffing, how do you do it? And I think that's probably part of the issue here today.
Okay, I'll go next. How much time?
Okay. Does someone want to keep time, moderate?
I don't know.
Somebody with a watch.
This is probably going to take, what I wrote down is going to take more than what we have, but I'll try to go through it. I'm going to divide like the audience for our local news coverage, at least in Santa Barbara, it makes sense to do this, between people who are live their daily lives, are too busy to really take, they feel like they're too busy to take much part in local politics or things like that. They're raising families and things like that. And we have a significant activist community that listens to us, too. And they're drawn to work in the station, too. So we have, I think, a sort of activist model of news. And I'll explain what that means, too, when I get to that. One of the things in our community that I think our local news coverage can do is not replace some of the mainstream coverage that we get. We have a daily newspaper in Santa Barbara, and a neighboring community, Goleta, has two daily newspapers, believe it or not, even though the city was only formed in February. On television, we have ABC is the local station, only one local television station. They have an AM radio station as well. And so Disney is there, and you get big chunks of the local newscast devoted to promoting Disney's California in Southern California as a theme park and things like that. On the radio, we have, I think, 5 clear channel stations in a very small community. One of them is in Spanish language. And it's just, again, 100 to 200,000 people is the context we're talking about. So one of the roles I think I'd like to see, we're just starting out as a news program, one of the roles I'd like to see us play is in de-educating people. If they've gone through just even public schooling in America, they've gotten a lot of misinformation. We'd like to see our news counter misinformation about, you know, like how things happen historically, you know, citizens movements and things like that, which don't get good coverage of in the mainstream press. Government officials are always spinning facts or presenting misinformation. We like to critique that, get a different perspective on some of those things. And this whole talk, I think I'm going to be like saying things that I heard in Errol's talk, the keynote last night, Errol Maitland, and other people that I've been hearing from today. But he said one of the roles that we can play is to provide real images of yourself and others. And he put it this way, the voices of other times and other lands and people. And what I mean by that is things like programming that supports cultural survival. We have native populations in our listening audience, and we like to present their perspectives on the air as much as possible. The goings-on on the reservation there, they're actually pretty powerful with the casino going on, too, so we want to cover that and its impact on the non-native community. Santa Barbara is very seemingly ethnically homogenous community, but there are histories of ethnic populations in Santa Barbara that we'd like to expose to people who may feel, you know, who may have that misperception that Santa Barbara is all white and all rich, although the master narrative is the tourism industry in Santa Barbara, really, and housing is probably the other big one that we have. I can't get too deep into any of this, unfortunately. Another role I think I see us playing is with a bilingual population, a lot of Spanish speakers in our community, we sometimes play the role of translation between communities that wouldn't otherwise have contact or be able to share ideas and perspectives. So we're trying really hard and not successful so far to get Spanish language public affairs and news programming, to get reporters out there who can do bilingual interviews and incorporate that into our stories. I think without Spanish-speaking reporters, we're missing a major portion of the local news. And in California, it's like very clear there, and the rest of the country is going to go that way soon. It may be a different language in different areas, but that's a role that we can play. And I think that allows for, demystifying the other, to put it in kind of an academic way, making and building solidarities between groups that are separated in that way. The music we play, I think, does a little bit of that, too, and it's important part of the station, but the news can do that as well. And if there's any animosities or the history of racism, we have the genocide of Native California to deal with, and yet we just finished celebrating the city. The tourism industry put together something called the Fiesta, which celebrates not the indigenous population, not even the Mexican population, but old Spanish days, the Hispanic, white, quote-unquote, colonizers. And we can give a different perspective on that. But we can also, like, there's a lot of resentment. We can maybe start to bridge divides there. And I like that word demystify a little, too, because I think one of the things you don't get, even though you're highly educated, we're on a college campus, I think what a lot of people don't get is, like, how their communities really work. How do decisions get made? And if you don't know how that happens, you don't know that the city council meets weekly at this time, and they'll listen to you, they'll take some of your input, or you can pressure them in certain ways, then you're never going to be able to influence that system. I mean, that's not the only way you should be working, but that's something we can do, is show people how local government works, local economic decisions are made, housing policy, things like that. Just over and over and over again, get people, introduce them to the idea that, you know, it's not mysterious. It's something that you can know, it's something you can participate in. So we can answer questions like, why is housing so expensive? A lot of people might not know. And we can spell out some of the historical things leading up to that. We can spell out some of the people and name their names who have made decisions that are influencing that, if necessary. And just in general, we can serve as a way of helping people, once they understand local institutions, to give them ammunition for their critique of local institutions, if necessary, again. If there's something working good in the community, we should cover that as well, too. And you can talk in your news stories, you can frame some of your news stories in terms of exposing the motivations of people who are making decisions. Why is this person mayor versus that person? What sort of connections did they do to get elected? And what are they trying to accomplish now that they're in office? Things like that. We can, for people, again, we're still talking about non-activist communities, but we can introduce them to groups in their communities that are making changes, that they can get involved in. Every story we try to do, we try to include contact information, some action you can take, going to a meeting, writing a letter, something like that. We always try to include that right at the end of the story. And I think one of the things I want to do that we haven't been able to do so much is encourage people to take out a pen at the beginning of a news broadcast, for instance, and use the web to like record some of this stuff too and spread it. And part of this demystification and demystification of local institutions and introduction to local groups is, you know, your own station sometimes. We try to encourage participation, people coming out for training sessions and things like that, and to just show that how easy it is to become a journalist and to report on your own community, and that your voice as somebody who's never done anything technical before, who has never gone to journalism school or anything, that's important. I'm halfway done. Is that okay?
Keith's been speaking for 10 minutes. Do people want to leave 45 minutes or 35 minutes after maybe each of us present for questions and open discussion among everyone? Why don't we aim 45 minutes for that, and if we need to cut it back, we can. Which would mean go for it.
Okay.
We'll
find
another 5 minutes, right?
Okay. Then for activist groups, not only can we publicize their activities, help them to get interested and active people who weren't active before into their groups, caring about the community, feeling like they can make a difference. We can do a couple things for them as well with our coverage. We offer training, and at the university we have a good opportunity. A lot of people know good research methods. That's one of the things that universities teach well. And you can share that with the community with the coverage you do. So activist organizations don't have the same access to information that we have on campus. They don't have access to the same skills which people on campus are paying a lot of money to get, or sacrificing family life or something to get, that your listeners and activists can't do. They're too busy doing whatever they do. So you can do some of the research for these organizations that, you know, you think about, you know, like a question that they may have or a fact that they may need to know that might give you an idea for a story, or somebody to go talk to and get an interview on the air. So one of the things I think we do regularly and often is kind of a calendar or bulletin board part of our newscast. You know, this meeting is coming up. They want you to come to this forum, this speaker. There's a march happening, things like that. So that helps with the timing of political action in our community. I think the last thing I want to say, though, is like Gretchen mentioned this from CKUT about legal solidarity. I think that's a great idea, and that's a good framework even to think about we're making as journalists in our local community documents that of what's happening, documents of the actions of decision makers and things like that that wouldn't otherwise be made. And that's important. It serves the collective memory of the community, and I could go on and on about why I think that's a good idea, but I'm out of time. Thank you.
So I just realized we only have until 3 o'clock, which is about 52 minutes left. And we want to leave at least 15 or 30 minutes, ideally, for question and answers and involvement. So that would mean each of us would want to keep it down to 6 or 8 minutes. Is that okay with you all?
Yeah, I'm anxious to get to exchange.
Yeah.
I'm sorry it takes so much
time. We want to have a little exchange right now just to keep this more interactive before going on to
actually.
Each.
Uh-huh. What's your structure like? When do you do the news and how many people are involved in it?
It's changing. We're growing. Right now we have me and Jenny in the back there with red hair. As news directors, we spend a lot of time in the newsroom organizing things. When the quarter starts, we're going to be running kind of an internship where we meet weekly and basically get a crash course in the community. We have local people come in and talk about housing or other things, other issues. And we have 2 weekends, one for basic journalism training, one for technical training, in the other order, though, technical first and then journalism. And then we try to get people on the air as fast as we can, doing headlines or something, and producing 4 or 5 stories over the course of an academic quarter. We broadcast 3 days a week for 15 minutes, and Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're not sure what we're going to do, but we've been filling that with indie media stuff, downloaded audio. We usually try to put that in the context of a local issue. It's like, this is impacting us locally. We found this audio, experts to talk about it, things like that. But that's really just a placeholder until we can go daily with maybe 15 minutes. And then there's a lot of PA programs that have local content. We have a lot of in-house public affairs programming that's really excellent, but it's hour-long shows.
Does anyone else want to ask questions? Or?
The thing about the community groups, putting the information out so you can put it out, I think that's really important. I'm at WNF in Tampa, and we are revamping our website so community groups can go directly to our website and post their PSAs, and what we'll do is
wow.
condense them down to a format that's readable on the air, and you can take it right off the DJ can take it right off the web in the air station. And we encourage when we go to events, when we go out to the community, when we go to community events, we encourage we talk to people. If you have something going on, let us know, give it to us, and we'll put it in the studio to be read. And we get 300 or 400 a week.
Wow.
So it's really amazing. If you go out,
how many watts your station?
75,000.
They're big.
They're big.
Yeah, but we go out and actively seek those.
Uh-huh.
We have two. We have a volunteer plus. Well, we have a volunteer, one news volunteer, and our receptionist take care of all the PSA. And we pre-record some. We go through a select number, and we'll pre-record some of those, and then things that are hot. We'll take right away. We'll run him in the studio. Like Bush is coming down for a visit to see his brother in town, so the protesters will be at such and such a place. You know, it's that type of thing. I think it's very important to get those out. We put a big emphasis on that, and it's very important to do that. It's part of serving the community.
Just to make sure we get through, maybe take one more question. I noticed you had your hand up.
Can I just
back and then we can move on?
Can I just respond?
I
just want to respond to this idea of learning about your communities by bringing groups, representative groups in and posting PSAs on the website. Just like we're often critical of newspapers that basically print public relations from corporations or local groups, I think there's a danger, too, in not drawing a fine line distinguishing between what's a public service announcement and what's news.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And also, I've always been told that in order to learn a language, you have to be immersed in the country of that language. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I still think it's a good idea to invite reps of some of these organizations, but just to keep in the back of your mind that you have to be somewhat wary, and you still have to have an editor's viewpoint about, you know, where does the truth lie.
Absolutely.
Somewhat. So just to, so
that's
sort of a
hard question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Either of you like to go next?
All right. Want me to go?
Yes.
I'm curious, how many of you are currently involved in a local news production or at a station where local news is going on? So fewer than half, or some about half? Okay. Just so. Just a few observations about my experience. First of all, I like this concept of what did you call it?
Master narrative.
There's an old joke in Boston, and the punchline ends with sports and politics. I mean, you know, in the area that I live, I think there's a ton. I mean, it's an urban, mostly urban, somewhat suburban area. There's a lot of sub-narratives, but in the Boston area, the station where I do my show and my local news production is in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right next door to Boston, and I live just south of Boston. But the master, if you had to give a master narrative, it would probably be power and money. Everything comes back to power and money. And a lot of the stories revolve around issues of who's getting or who's not getting the power and the money. Couple of observations. I have noticed, and noticed even more since the protests in Seattle, that a lot of our local news is actually very global. We're covering or events and organizations that on the local level are trying to sort of bring knowledge and wisdom about what's happening around the world based on U.S. foreign policy, for instance, to local people. And that's not necessarily a bad or a good thing, but it's something to be aware of, is how much of our local news, because of our political and social opinions, actually has this global context. My understanding of local newspapers is that it's not quite so yet. Most local stories have to do with, for instance, local zoning or local development, which in some ways, yes, has some global reach, but not nearly as much as what we're doing on the radio. And in fact, I produced a couple of half an hours that I called the Think Global, Act Local News. And they were stories. For instance, there was a demonstration in front of the Gap in Boston, okay, because the clothes are made in sweatshops, you know, and the people who work in the local Gap are not paid very well. So you had you had local concerns sort of meshing very well with international concerns. Bless you. And I have found that there's no dearth of material to cover. At least in the area where I do most of my work. One of the other observations I would make is that in terms of finding this, figuring out what to cover, this may be a concern for some people. You have limited resources, you have a limited number of people, and you ask the question, okay, what are we gonna apply our limited resources to? The thing that most seems to help us decide what we're going to cover is specifically what events are going on in our area. In a way to sort of disparage the anti-globalization movement, this has been referred to as protest hopping or demonstration hopping. But we do cover a lot of event-oriented things, and we're lucky we have a very powerful listserv in Boston called Activism Massachusetts, or ACTMA, that we all look at every day, and organizations post events, and that helps us decide what we're going to cover. So I would look for these sorts of things, and I would look for that in your area as some sort of or start something, maybe through the radio station website. Because it's a dispatch problem. You know, what are you going to dispatch your people to go cover? And in fact, John and I and several other people in Boston have had these discussions about how are we going to assign people to cover things. So that I don't have an answer for the dispatch problem, but one of the things that help us decide what to cover is this vast list of events and notices about speakers coming to town and events that are happening. The station where I contribute to the local news program, it's very unique, I think, in that nobody's really out there judging what we do. Where there isn't a, basically the person coordinating the show will take whatever material she can gather. So one week it's a little kind of sketchy as to what she's going to throw on, and if she doesn't have a produced piece, she'll do an interview with someone. And some weeks she has lots of fully produced pieces. For instance, on Tuesday was the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. Myself and two other reporters produced a 12-minute piece based on a peace walk that took place to commemorate the dropping of the bomb. And then she filled the rest of the time with an interview. So my point being that when you're crafting your news for that show, it doesn't have to be all produced pieces. It doesn't have to be all interviews. It can be a combination of things. But just from a listener standpoint, I think it's important to hear a range of voices and a range of methods, a range of types of stories, of ways of telling the story. So, a produced piece segueing into an interview, segueing into maybe a bit of a speech. Three different types of local news elements in that show. So those are my basic observations.
Can I ask you a question before you
go? Sure.
You mentioned citizen journalists when
Yes.
you first spoke. What is that?
That's a person who might be active in a campaign for social or political justice, let's say, mm-hmm. who in addition to their grassroots organizing work, knocking on doors, lobbying their congresspeople or their local legislators, whatever, also wants to take part in producing media about the issue that they're concerned about. So, for instance, my project, the Boston Community Reports Project, one of our goals is to give people the skills, people from these organizations or involved in campaigns, the skills to tell their own stories. And I didn't coin that phrase. In fact, it was that phrase, citizen journalist, may have been coined by the founders of the Seattle Indie Media or someone else. I make a distinction for myself, which is that I'm an advocate journalist. What that means is the journalism comes first. Mm-hmm. I'm not a journalist activist, mm-hmm. whereas the citizen journalists are somewhat journalist activists. Their activism comes first.
But are you
first.
An advocate of journalism?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, are you worried about bias? I mean, are you worried about them getting out there, like you talked before about running press releases or corporate kind of things? Those people can have their own agenda, obviously.
Right. Well, what I'm attempting to do is work with people and give and educate them about journalism and to give them the skills so they have a certain measure of credibility. Now, some of you may chafe about this word credibility because that may make you think of mainstream journalism, journalists who talk a lot about unbiased reporting and credibility, but I'll give you a distinct example. I am attempting right now to work with the Service Employees International Union, Local 615 in Boston. They represent about 10,000 janitors who work in the big office buildings in Boston. And they're in the middle of negotiations with the companies that hire the janitors to do the cleanup work at night. And they have this campaign. It's called the Justice for Janitors campaign. And they've had marches down into the financial district of Boston, and they've had public meetings where they try to explain for people what's the status of the negotiations. And the Boston Globe has had a story here and there. And I haven't seen any coverage on local commercial television. And we've tried to cover it through the community radio station a little bit. But what I want to do is give these janitors themselves the skills to tell their own story in a way that's journalistic, in sort of a maybe a capital letter J kind of a sense, in that they interview other janitors, they interview union people, and they go out and they interview the bosses. Now, this is somewhat in an experimental stage. We don't know if the bosses are going to agree. It's also a little challenging for me because most of these janitors are Spanish speakers, and I'm not fluent in Spanish, but we're working with translators. So I think it's just so much more powerful to, it's certainly, it's a local story that has implications for the entire country. Are janitors getting, janitors working to get a better contract, not just for the money, but for better working conditions, more recognition for what they do, and having them tell the stories from their perspective.
We have a couple more minutes. If anyone else had
ideas they wanted to offer or questions about what was just talked about.
Go ahead.
I know I've heard of this going in terms of giving individual people the whole citizen journalist kind of thing, but why would you as a journalist and why would we as radio people be willing to trade what we hope would be unbiased reporting for what we're actually doing is creating biased reporting? So that's motivation. As I can understand, why would you give people who already have an existing bias? Why would you either train them to remove the bias, which seems kind of pointless, or else train them to convey their bias in the news? It just seems like it's kind of a risky business. What do you think?
Would you mind if I answer that one? Or if you want to ask David, go ahead.
Well, since you were specifically talking about you're in the process of doing the janitor.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much of a trade or a trade-off. I don't buy into the idea that any journalism is unbiased. I just don't buy into it. But right. I mean, when I craft a story, I always try to talk to representatives of groups who have traditionally been dismissed and disparaged as being interested parties. As what's the phrase that they use? Special interest groups. But I go and I talk to the labor unions, I talk to the American Friends Service Committee, I talk to all these other groups that the mainstream commercial media immediately won't talk to. But you have to look at it, I think you have to look at it this way. There's more than two opinions in any story. There's many, many more ways of telling a story. So you need to talk to people, a lot of different people with a lot of different opinions, all of whom will have a bias. Let me answer that question one other way. Carl Bernstein of the famous Bernstein and Woodward team, you probably have all heard of Watergate, came to Harvard University to speak at the Kennedy School in the mid-1980s. And he said something that made a deep impression upon me. He said, first of all, not enough journalists and not enough news organizations are out there doing the kind of investigative work that needs to be done. And he said, what journalists need to be doing is finding the best available version of the truth. Hmm. And I've posted that on the very front page of my website, the best available version of the truth. Sometimes you're close to the truth, and sometimes you're far from the truth, but you do the best you can. Does that kind of answer what you're no, not at all.
Even when you were answering the question, you weren't doing it from the perspective that you're aiming for. You were saying you need to go allow to interview various aspects. But what in reality you're doing is you're assigning the journalist's role to one of the interested parties, in this case the janitors, and saying, so your words should be, they will need to go out. Because you're still saying, you're still speaking, you need to, as if you're speaking to peers who are journalists like you. But the point is that once you make a janitor a journalist, are they a journalist or a janitor? Well, if they're what we typically think of as a journalist, somebody who's on the side, reporting from your side, they're no longer of the group janitor.
Could I ask you a question that I hope directly relates to that? I just want to note, I think we've only got 2 minutes to continue this segment of Q&A. I'd love to respond because it briefly, and I noticed you had your hand up. Do you mind waiting till the next question phase?
No, I wanted a chance to respond to this issue.
Okay, maybe why don't we take a little extra time on this? Let me respond first to what you said. I would just ask the question. I think the question you asked is a great one, and I'd like to ask the same question, except from another perspective. How would you ask that question of a corporate journalist employed by a major media corporation, and you're his or her editor, and you said, I want you to go out and cover this issue about corporate ownership of the media, for example, or any other story that's connected to corporate power? Don't you think that, and do you think that the journalist would then be in the predicament of being in the midst of a situation of corporate power and having to earn a salary and feed his or her family with it? How would you deal with that inherent bias and that trap?
Their own thing, and it's just personal propaganda. That's wrong, and that's very obvious that that's wrong. So from that same perspective, why should we as community activist type groups of people be taking into our, or is it saying, well, if they can fight that way, maybe we should too. But it just looks fake and wrong when they do it. Why should we be doing it? We should be actively questioning the corporate power.
Just that as a point of order, I want to try to
get to the other question
before.
I'm half-baked and completely fried. I've had 3 hours of sleep in the past 72, and so I may not make any sense, but it strikes me that really what the issue is what is the role of a community media? And it doesn't matter if it's a newspaper or a radio station, a TV station, or if it's a bunch of people who get together and play guitars at a coffee shop. What is their role? And it strikes me that their role is to provide a method for a certain story, for a certain voice to come forth. And those voices of those janitors don't come forth. And so if you provide a mechanism for them to come forth, honestly, they're not out there saying, send $5,000 each to the Janitors for Justice Foundation so we can get a house in Aspen, right? They're out there saying, this is what it's like to be a janitor. This is what it's like to face this day after day. That is important. And I'm not saying that you're wrong in asking your question. It is a great question. But it's a fundamental misunderstanding on a lot of people's part that what we're supposed to do is to provide objectivity. But that's not what we're supposed to do, is be a vector for subjectivity, which doesn't have a chance to show up because there are a bunch of lying assholes saying, we're being objective. And that's the key issue.
Well, in that case, though, we should be providing just the perspective of, say, the janitors, rather than training them to view multiple sides. Like, maybe this isn't really what you were planning on doing, but as soon as you said, I want the janitors to interview the washer, at that point I was like, at that point you're like training them to get both sides. Why even bother that? Why not just put forth their viewpoint? Teach them how to interview techniques and all that.
I just wanted to jump in for a second and say that a lot of what is being discussed here is innovative and experimental, but to address your point of bias, one way to deal with that right straight out, whether it's corporate or whether it's the janitors, is just tell people where the information disclosure. It's disclosure. Say, these are janitors. I think that's pretty clear with what you're doing. And it's even if you're sending them out to talk to their bosses, that alone, that interaction alone, whatever it does to the janitor, I'm not sure, but to the people, to see what kind of questions they want to know, what information do these people want to know from their bosses? And as long as you do it under the open rubric of disclosure, just like someone is out there. I told you I worked for this newspaper that was around here, the Times Herald Record, owned by Dow Jones, Wall Street Journal, all that. When I was a reporter, we'd walk the picket line and we'd cover our own story. But we said in that story, these reporters work for Ottawa News, they are looking for this, and just you tell what's going on. If there was, when the Daniel Pearl story was going on, often those stories in our newspaper would say, and this newspaper is owned by Dow Jones, which is the publisher of the Wall Street Journal, just so that everyone knows. I mean, then you can at least make your own judgment about whether you know where it's coming from, and you factor out certain pieces of information because it's flattering to the corporation or it's not flattering or whatever it may be. As long as you know the janitors are talking, then I think that really lessens the problem with it, because people have that frame of reference on it.
I just want to note, is it okay with people if we continue along this line? I think it's great to stay with what people are interested in. If we add a few minutes past 3, the next workshops start at 3:30. Is that okay?
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I thought this was a great dialogue because it demonstrated, fleshed out a lot of the issues between the media movements and the sort of productivity. And the point was really, it was pointed when you said, what's the value of having the janitors ask the boss the questions? So we've now added disclosure to it, and it's the questions that the janitors have, and that newsworthy value, the value of that is what his point is. That's amazing value that we have out there. And it's kind of stands on its own as a new kind, that's the sort of element of, citizen journalist. That's how I would. That's an example I would give to citizen journalist. Because not only are they a worker, they're a participant in the society in a way that's real, more real than dismissed that you can play God and have all different sides of the story that you can even think that you can know what question the janitor would ask. New janitor, what are the issues? Don't have that person's life and point of view. So empowering them. Become a questioner and a quasi journalist.
Gretchen, you had your hands up?
That is in the media, or the way to demonstrate what that is, which addresses these questions that you are raising, which are really valid, and that's what kind of we're due to thinking. Most readers think that, journalists are objective. Oh, these people are just giving their propaganda, channel serve, go on. Which is, this is why I wanted to say the point out loud, is that empowers me to really be able to clarify for people what the value is that they're getting.
I just want to quickly say that this is somewhat on the drawing board, and it's challenging, and it's not going to be easy. But what I'm trying to do, and perhaps demonstrate to others so that they may pick this up in some way, shape, or form too, is sort of a middle ground between the indie media concept, everybody who wants to can just post, and you're not sure what their background is or where they're coming from or what their objectives are, and the other end of the spectrum, which is this sort of emotionless, denuded, commercial media that claims there's no bias whatsoever. So it's sort of a foot in both camps.
Can I exercise some of my privilege up here or not?
Oh, Gretchen, sorry, I forgot.
Sorry.
Actually, I think it would be great if we just kept with the stack a little bit.
Go ahead.
Maybe take a couple questions and then go ahead.
Well, there was two things that I wanted to make a comment on. One was going again to the benefits of having the janitors talk to the boss. You eliminate the so-called journalist. And I don't myself see a difference between a journalist and a janitor. And I think is at the heart of grassroots media. That is what is at the heart of independent media is that there's no distinction between the journalist and the common folk. And the reason why I say it's an actual benefit to eliminate the journalist having the janitor speaking to the bosses is because you're going to the source. You're going to the source of the conflict. If the journalist is having a conflict with the bosses, isn't it great to get a dialogue going between the janitor and the bosses and having them talking to each other and having a record of that in a very public, massive way? So that then the people who are consuming that media, they become the filter rather than the journalist and the editor and the layout person. You see what I'm saying? And that is at the heart of what I know is to eliminate conflicts. But then again, this issue of disclosure comes up. And if it's disclosed that it's the janitor interviewing the boss, then the person who's consuming the media is completely aware. You know, and they know what they're consuming. Unlike commercial media, where you don't know that the person who's being represented on the screen as a conflict in the Middle East expert used to be a subversive from CIA in the Netherlands. So that kind of disclosure is not going to make sense. But we adapted the other thing I would say is that we actually do have a project in being implemented that has been on air for a number of months now, if not a whole year, based on the model that you're talking about, and it's on CKUT. It's broadcasting 5,000 live. 1 hour a week, we have a show called Open Conspiracy for Social Change, where community groups come in and they do the news. And they do the news from their organization's perspective. They talk about issues that their organization's working on. Go to Radio for All that month to look at Chat Radio, that's one of the groups that the Montreal Games Passes to bring into the famous rock film, Rock Hall, Rock Hall.
Try to exercise my own bias to include people who have not had a chance to say something yet. Anyone?
You want a
question?
How about you?
Sure. Or Barbara, I know you may want some time.
I was thinking maybe you wanted to speak.
Okay. I can take a turn. Actually, I'm curious to find out what people would find most useful to what direction to take the discussion. And so are people interested in talking about how to get more volunteers for local news? Are people interested in talking about what is local news, how to link it globally? Any other issues people feel like they want to head in?
Well, how to find local news. I thought that's how you start out. How do you find and what is local news? So that's where you start out with the master narrative.
Yeah.
You already touched on how they're related.
Right.
I think that question about how do you find local news is a great one, because I noticed that a lot of the local news sources in the Boston area, where I'm from anyway, Boston, Massachusetts, the organizations that have paid staffs or anyone that can devote full time to investigating and keeping up with what's going on in the city, they're very few, and they tend to be the for-profit corporate press, so the Boston Globe, the Boston Herald, the local television stations, and a little bit of the local NPR and radio stations. I think those are all sources worth looking at, checking out, and listening to. And I I pillage them as much as I can. I try not to rely entirely on them. And I think at the same time, it's important to also develop a hotbed of sources of information in your community. And that can include and start with local organizations like the Local Justice for Janitors campaign, and getting to know individual people, even if it's just going to a party to meet them and talk with them and exchange phone numbers and tell them, well, when something's happening with the janitors and you hear it from the ground, just like any investigative reporter on a paid staff would do, please call me. I want to hear about that. And I think that means something to a lot of community groups that are used to sending endless faxes and press releases and letters and making phone calls to the mainstream press and never getting a response. And a lot of community groups have, well, if they're big enough, they have a paid staff member whose full-time job is exclusively and only to relate to the major mainstream press. I don't think it's because they only care about the mainstream corporate press. It's because that's where most of the listeners are, and they're being realistic about reaching the public. And that's important to do, too. But for some stories, a lot of community groups really value that people like us are willing to tell their part of the story and include detail about bias and perspective that we've all just been talking about. I still think, sort of along the lines of this idea of working with listening to the mainstream press in a city, the source of paid reporters that are always looking around at what's going on, you can actually pick up stories from them when you notice them in a newspaper, and it doesn't mean you have to report verbatim what they say or even go with the main theme that they emphasize, but at least you may hear first from them with their paid staffs that something's happening, and then you can go there yourself and look it up. Or maybe after a year of doing this, by that time you know someone related to some community group or locally, you know them personally, and you trust their perspective more. And instead of calling the spokesperson for the company that's busting the janitor's union, you call the janitor or the janitor's cousin because you happen to know that person. And then you just build out from there and develop your sources. One example of that I found successful in following was actually just picking up in the Boston Globe a little story about the development of the New England Patriots football stadium. And I actually have to say, I don't even know who the Patriots played against in the last Super Bowl, even though I live in Boston. St. Louis Rams. I just don't follow sports. And that probably loses me a lot of audience of people who do follow sports. And my guess is that actually, I don't really want to be telling my kind of citizens or progressive take on the news to people who already know it all or are the most open to that perspective. Sure, I'd love to offer all those folks my perspective and information, but I think the people who really need to hear it most and the way I might create the most social change are people who've never had an opportunity to hear another perspective, like most people, like me all the way through public school, never getting an opportunity to hear about independent media. I think it's way more important that we stop talking to ourselves and start talking to people who don't even know we exist. Otherwise, I think it's utterly useless. I mean, I totally believe in solidarity and sharing sources and having a good time at conferences like this too. But a new volunteer I was working with on my radio show, Sounds of Dissent in Boston, noticed this in the Boston Globe and said, John, have you seen this story? And I hadn't seen it, about the Patriots were in the headline. I probably would have ignored it myself. And this was Super Bowl weekend. I do my show on Saturday. And there's just this buzz in the city. Everyone's paying attention and thinking about the Super Bowl, buying beer for the Super Bowl and their tickets and Super Bowl parties and which Super Bowl party are we going to go to. So how do you get attention in a climate like that to what else is going on in the world? And I think one of the lessons we can take from major corporations who've had the staff to study this problem, like how do you get attention for your product when everyone else is thinking about the real world, is you... There you go. You go where... Exactly. You go where they are. Go where the audience is. And don't go where the progressive audience is. Don't go to the grassroots group to find listeners. That's easy. They'll come along anyway. Go to the football stadium. or go somewhere where it's a real challenge. And it's possible to do. Laura Levati from the National Radio Project has a great story. She went to a stadium and got somehow the football team on the side of the group 50 Years is Enough, and convinced the football team and the owners of the stadium. And she wound up with a table like this inside the football stadium advocating to drop the debt of the third world. And in addition to that, she got on the flashing scoreboard with the light-emitting diodes with flashing the sign at halftime. She got to say, like, what's the name of the team out there? Oakland Raiders. Oakland Raiders in 50 Years is Enough. Team up to drop the debt. Flashing at halftime. Tell me where you would find that many listeners. How many people fill that stadium?
Maybe this is why they lost to the Patriots.
So I think it's possible to do it. And it's not the easiest thing to do always or the most intuitive thing, but it's fun and it's creative and it's possible to reach people that way. I ended up doing a story that week. The first thing I did was it was hard for me to do this, but I had to say something neutral like at the beginning of the radio show. Anyone who's listening who is going to plan on watching the Super Bowl tomorrow, I didn't mention that I was not. Call in and let us know which team you think is going to win. Or I said something slightly controversial, like odds are 2-1 against this team or that team. And the phones lit up. And I realized how many potential listeners I could reach with things like that. Anyway, I ended up doing a story. Again, credit to the Boston Globe for publishing this. And I went a little bit farther with it than the Globe did. About public subsidy for this new football stadium that was being built and rebuilt with private box seats and special luxuries and higher priced concessions for everyone, called CMGI Stadium. CMGI is a local computer related company that's incidentally down the tubes lately with all the corporate scandals recently. But at that time, they had just gotten their name on the top of the football stadium, and they had the gall to force the state and the cities to publicly subsidize a special off-ramp off the highway. Not for regular football watchers, football fans. Just an exclusive off-ramp from the highway only for the people who had bought and purchased these high-priced box seats. Whoa. In other words, major corporations who buy box seats to entertain their clients. Public subsidy, and people are all, now think of the interest of people, football fans, who are all waiting in line in the highway in the hot sun to get into the Super Bowl, and they see the elites and the wealthy and the royalty sort of funneled off in the special off-ramp. They didn't pay for the off-ramp. We did, and everyone else, all the rest of the fans did. Anyway, it was like the perfect story about economic inequality and all kinds of other themes you could have spun off out of that. So I think our world is so influenced and controlled or manipulated, at least, by money and power, that there are stories everywhere you could look, just under the surface, about that theme, for example, about economic inequality or lack of access and a public voice for the average person. I want to take a couple more minutes and just talk a little bit about finding volunteers to work on news and news stories like this. But you have your hand up.
Lots of emails, but you know, I just open them up for free, and I find out about all kinds of things that are going on that I wouldn't know about otherwise. And I'm able to cover a fair number of them for a station where I live. And you know, it's a good. I think it's a really. I take it on as many as you can and just filter them.
I love a whole diversity of sources like that. Email lists of community organizations. Or just sign up if it makes it easier for you to get local news as a volunteer. I don't get paid for my work, and I have to do it a couple of hours every day to keep up with local news and other stories. But if you and other people you work with can each sign up for, even if it's a local corporate newspaper, if they have like a local news email list, or if there's a section of the website, just to check it to siphon off what they're doing, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel, so we can use their sources as triggers and alerts for us to go and investigate the more important angle about a story that they're probably not going to look at or report, or their editors won't allow them to report like we would. I also think that right now in this country we have this opportunity to work with this growing network that's connecting local grassroots organizations with global issues, which is the Independent Media Center network that started in 2000, and now only 2 years later, I think last count there were over 70 of these around the world, and predominantly in the United States because of our extra resources. What I've tried to do in Boston is, not everyone in Boston knows about my radio program, and people from outside Boston who move into the city, and the 250,000 population of college students who move into Boston and out of it every year, don't know about my radio show, but they probably have heard of the Independent Media Center, or at least more of them have. So David and others of us who have been doing community radio for a decade or more work with the Independent Media Center to tell people about our programs, and also to tell them about opportunities at community radio stations, and also to work with them as local reporters, as like a natural constituency of people interested in local news. And we can offer some of the new IMC members who might not have had as much experience in reporting or have gotten into community radio like we have that opportunity or some training. And in return, offer us information and news stories and effort and enthusiasm. So one 19-year-old reporter, a member of the Independent Media Center named Rhea Ferrich, found herself a part-time staff position at a local little independent newspaper called the Weekly Dig. Little tabloid thing, trying to do progressive stories, and actually they have a small staff of like 15 people, and they take advertisements too. Well, this little paper that's distributed for free at little kiosks was one of the only newspapers in the city to report on a major story about torture in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that fit into the whole national and international context of torture and illegal detentions of immigrants and quote-unquote aliens and foreigners or anyone suspected of terrorism or anything related to it. And this is a national story that's going largely unreported in the national press, and here's a local example of it. And thanks, actually, to a local organizing group I have mixed feelings about called ANSWER, Act Now to Stop War and End Racism, affiliated with the IACE International Action Center and the Workers' World Party locally. Well, they did the best job, incidentally, of tracking and finding out what happened to this guy who was detained. A Canadian citizen, a Palestinian, had leaflets in his car about a demonstration in a Jewish community area of Boston in Brookline on his Israel Independence Day. Not the best sort of PR choice to do this issue, in my opinion. But anyway, the guy's carrying leaflets, legal leaflets. He was stopped on a traffic offense. Cambridge City Police took him into custody. He was moved to detention by the Immigration and Nationalization Service, put in Bristol County Jail, or just outside of Boston, and had four molars extracted while in custody. And, of course, the jail claims that he signed release forms permitting this. He was held incommunicado, and the Boston Globe didn't have a story on this. The Weekly Dig, with its little tabloid-free distribution, scooped the Boston Globe on this story.
And the Cambridge Chronicle,
too, another local paper. These local independent newspapers, like Barbara mentioned, I feel are totally crucial. They are independent media. I mean, at least most of them are independent of corporate ownership, of ownership by a larger conglomerate. Now, this was majorly under attack in Boston because Fidelity Investments went and bought up local papers all around Greater Boston, put it under a consortium called the Community News Corporation, and now that was traded off and sold to the Boston Herald. So there are even very few remaining independent sources of news with paid staff, but here's one example of one. Anyway, this 19-year-old reporter Rhea Ferrich, who was a member of the Independent Media Center, who got herself a job at this weekly Dig newspaper, went and interviewed the Canadian consulate, because this guy was a Canadian Palestinian, and interviewed and called up the jail and the sheriff and did all the stuff that any reporter would do, and published information scooping the Boston Globe. And I was just thrilled. Why should I go and do extra work about this story to report it after it came out on Wednesday on my Saturday radio show? Well, I didn't do any extra work. I just called up Rhea Ferrich and said, would you please be on my radio show? I'd just like to interview you. Tell people about the Weekly Dig, about your work, about the Independent Media Center, and this huge national and local story of torture in the Boston area. And so I mentioned that whole story because I think I hope it's an example of how not to reinvent the wheel and duplicate effort, how to work with and encourage and work in solidarity with local existing independent media outlets and young people and new reporters and a resource like Independent Media Center.
Did the big papers pick that up?
They did. The Boston Globe published it after the Weekly Dig, yeah. New York Times? I had a research assistant with my radio program who's here, Deborah Levine, look up if this guy's name, Jawdat Abouaza, appeared in any database searches. He's a Canadian Palestinian or newspaper, major national newspapers in the United States. Or even, this covered like local papers in other cities. Didn't appear once. Not one mention. And she had access as a research librarian at Boston Public Library to all these sources until it appeared in, I think, the Boston Globe, probably the New York Times after this report.
Justify to their advertisers that people will listen. So sometimes they'll pick that stuff up.
I want to mention one other technique that I'm trying to still work on, and I wonder if it might be useful or if other people have similar experience and better ideas. And in trying to, I found that it took me years doing a community radio program to develop the attention span, the knowledge of sources, and just the time to know what to pay attention to find local news stories. And to work in isolation is really difficult, you know. And to work without talking with friends and other people to give you ideas and encourage you is really difficult. So in the Independent Media Center, whenever we have a meeting, every week or every 2 weeks or whatever it is, and no matter what kind of meeting, I encourage people to leave at least 10 minutes, if not an hour, to have a kind of an editorial roundtable among everyone there who's there in the room. No matter what the meeting's about. And just at a certain time say, look, let's have a quick go around, and every person just take 10 seconds and go around in a circle and just mention what news story you think is, doesn't even have to be, or something's going on and it hasn't gotten any coverage and you think it even might be in a story. Just mention it and we'll all go around. All of a sudden you have 10 people connecting to their sources and connections and membership organizations, connecting to hundreds or thousands of people fanned out from there, informing one another about potential new stories that are developing. And by the end of, a minute or 10 minutes later, you've got all these ideas written down in a brainstorm and just try to encourage people to talk and not debate the stories. 10 seconds each, what do you think? Let everyone speak. And then once you've got it all in a list, start talking about it. And then encourage people to prioritize. What of these do you think is the most important? You heard about this story, but you don't have any sources. Does anyone else have any source ideas where they could follow up on this? And all of a sudden, what do you have right there? You have a collective grassroots editorial meeting replacing something like the Boston Globe's or National Public Radio affiliate WBUR's more hierarchical style of paid editorial staff. And I think that's what citizen journalism is partly all about. But I'd love to also hear other people's ideas for involving people.
Just to take that a step further, you know, something we try to do on Rochester, New York, Independent Media, after we do that, we think about what the issues are and what the groups are. Not only are we, you know, with the concept of media democracy, we go out to these groups and we just say, like, this is what's up and this is what's available. Like, these are the, you know, tools we have and the equipment and, like, the ways that we're willing to help, like, get this information out. If you really want us to cover it, then we could try to do it. But, you know, you're the best ones to do this. This is, you know, Poor People's Coalition. This is Students Against the War on Campus. This is, you know, people that work for Kodak, you know, teachers that are doing it. Tell your story and, like, come into this and, you know, and then we're bringing more people in. And we kind of try to recruit at the screenings too, and we show like newsreel and stuff and try to see where people's, you know, so it's not only cost brainstorming, and then that's a great step, but then we go out to those organizations and kind of draw people in.
Great idea. Well, I just took a lot of time, I think. I want to make sure that Barbara gets some time. We're at 3:03. Do people mind staying a while and continuing
I'll
the discussion?
I'll just give a few observations. One is about your grassroots editorial meeting. Fabulous idea. It is one of the things that I miss, not being in a big newsroom. And when you're a reporter in a big newsroom, it's a huge drag to go to these meetings. But when you don't have the meetings, when you don't have the other brains, it's very missed. And it's a huge drag because these are your bosses, and that's why. But it's better to have them not be. But I also have a few people that I call my community editors who do discuss the stories with you. One of them is Christine. She'll say, no, I don't see why you're going down that path with that. And sometimes those don't get in the paper. So she spares me from work. This is good. But other times she'll have an idea, and she engages with it. But you identify these people, someone that will engage with your idea that truly does have an interest in it. And they don't really know they're your editors, but they are. And it's good to have them out there, and it's good to go to them. Make sure you do go to them, just like you have to actively stop the meeting. These things don't happen by themselves, I think is one of the lessons of today. People always complain they don't have time. No one gives them the time to do the news. There isn't any time. But you have to take the time. No one will give you the time. And I think that's one of my main mantras, and I don't always do it either. I mentioned master narratives in the beginning in terms of what's the news. And that's good. That's an exercise in and of itself to define the master narrative, find out what it is, and find out how it's evolving. You can't just continually repeat your master narrative. This is something that is changing, that has impact every day. And the other, but above that, there's a higher level of news, which is the news that people can be involved in, the news that people can change. I think that's the obligation, that's the role, it's heavy. It's something that can be not very much fun, is to find yourself obligated to do reporting on issues like a public hearing is coming up on an electricity plant they want to build near here, in fact. Just something like the election. If you're not doing that, you might question what it is that your role is. If you don't, and those stories seem staid and boring, and they're in the mainstream press, but to take those one step further and try some of these techniques that you talked about today to get cover them differently, do it differently so that people do become engaged with it. In newspapers, there's a movement called civic journalism, and it's been very much maligned, in fact, because it has regular citizens calling the shots on the news, and mainstream reporters bristle at the idea of having a focus group come in and tell them, this is what I think is the news, but these are real people. Because they're not journalists, it's disregarded. But this movement called civic journalism puts it up on a high level and says this is what you should be doing. So there's a split there in newspapers, some that do it and some that don't. But it's the highest level, to me it's the highest level of news, and it's probably most closely related to what you do in grassroots radio. Maybe somebody else wants to offer some things that have worked at your radio stations.
With the news stuff that we do at CKUT, it's open to anybody. Anybody from the community can come in and produce the news, whether they're affiliated with a community organization or they're not. And we do hold these weekly collective editorial workshops, is what we call them. And during the school year, because we have some school teachers and stuff, we meet at 6 to 7 sort of thing. And during the summer, it's been kind of interesting dealing with with people's vacation schedules because we've had a flux of representation. But when it's solid, we usually have about 9 folks who show up, which is amazing to me. Like, I've never been in an environment where 9 people show up. And I've never been in an environment with people who are, you know, a generation older than me doing news and wanting to do community media. Because the way I got involved with community media was through the NPBS and then through a street newspaper. So a lot of the people I was working with were younger. And so it's really interesting now dealing with people who are middle-aged or beyond. And also dealing with people, like, for example, there's one guy that comes who has Tourette's. There's one woman that comes who's got a serious depression disorder. And so these are people who are, and the reason I'm sharing this with you is because if you are planning to start up a community news collective at your station, or you want to do a community news project and you want to get people involved, one of the things that you have to be prepared for that I wasn't necessarily prepared for, but I'm kind of excited in dealing with, is the diversity that shows up, mm-hmm. and the kinds of people that you'll end up working with, and you have to have a lot of patience in dealing with this, folks. You know, for example, the woman with depression, there's times where you just have to repeat yourself a couple of times until you get her focus again, because she'll go off. You know, you'll see her eyes kind of glaze over and just kind of sink into her depressed mind. But anyway, so it's interesting the kinds of things you get into when you start working with other people who are just coming in off the street. And we have open house at CKT every third Thursday of the month, so we have you know, dozens or more folks coming in from the community, touring the station, coming in and expressing interest in community news, and they'll come to a couple of collective workshops, they'll share a couple of ideas, and then if they don't stick around to actually produce it, then we'll produce it ourselves. And some of those people have been single mothers, you know, who bring their kids in to the workshop. So it's really interesting when you open things up and you invite the community in, the kinds of people that come. But in all of that excitement, you have to be prepared to be very patient.
I'm interested in hearing how people do training. I'm with the Independent Media Center in Urbana, and we've done a radio show for about 2 years now. And I think our biggest, kind of our insurmountable thing is we have no paid staff at all, and everyone who does know how to actually produce news is at a premium. Like, we're all really stretched very thin. And so we're looking for models for training, and we've tried out different things. So I wondered if people could share ways, innovative ways to get to create more citizen journalists through training.
On-air training or training with, like, equipment and stuff?
All kinds of training, everything from journalism to the equipment. And particularly, we're focused on radio, although we do print and web and whatnot. But
you
I'm
might
focused
want
on radio.
Try, like, a buddy system. We've done that, mm-hmm. where we've had people pair up, like people who are new to media, pair up with someone who's done something, mm-hmm. Or had some kind of experience, and they'll go out with them and produce a news story with them. Same thing with on air. We do a lot of buddying up on air for on air training. Where, for example, one of my off-the-hour techs had no experience in radio, just invited me to come in. She expressed an interest, didn't really have any ideas for journalism, but wanted to get involved, needed a tech for one of the weekdays. And she came and she sat in on air, and, you know, there's sometimes when you have a pre-produced piece, well, once you get it on air, you can actually show a few things, you know, to the person in terms of what buttons to press and, like, just does this and stuff like that. And then you give them the chance to, you know, press the button, and they, you know, warm up into it, and then they sit in with you a couple more times, and then they have their first go at it with you there right beside the board with them. And then, you know, off they go, and in a couple weeks they're fully capable of handling it by themselves.
It's a centuries-old concept, what you're describing, but it's essentially mentor-apprentice, and it works.
I have a simple tool to offer, and we'll go to you, which is just a totally basic idea. But so in the IMC, we just started this email list called IMC Dispatch. David mentioned it earlier. And so out of these editorial meetings that can happen on the spot within 10 minutes of any meeting when people are gathered together, when there's some story that people want to go out and cover, or instantly, if someone hears there's a demonstration or a union rally that no one else heard of until right now, and you realize, oh, how can we cover this? It's happening right now. One way of doing it, it's not a guaranteed tool, but is send an email out to that dispatch list to, you know, 60 people in your local independent media center or your local whatever it is, and just say, this is happening. Is anyone available in the next 1 day or 3 hours or 2 days from now to go out with me? Either I have experience using a tape deck, but I want to work with someone else to do this, or I have no experience. All I know is that this is happening. Can someone else come out with me and so we can get this on tape? At least it's a way for people to get used to telling everyone at once, this is going on, and it's a volunteer crew, and half the people will be at work and can't leave their jobs. And the other half aren't checking their email, but at least a few of them end up being able to go out and cover something like that.
And this also might be something that's really obvious that people might already be doing, but just in terms of the training process, something that we're trying to do at KCSB is for every single technical process that occurs in the production reviews, have a step-by-step, often laminated sheet, or maybe just a folder where every computer program that you have, every process that you go through, whether it's burning audio from the internet, doing a telephone interview, somehow, somewhere in the station, have a file where you keep step-by-step instructions on how to do that. That's accessible to everyone at the station. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're community radio and we like to think that we're transparent and inclusive, you know, obviously we're all coming from different backgrounds in terms of access to technology and comfortability with technology. And often, you know, some people will hear something once, totally pick it up, and they can just go. But a lot of people, more often than not, need it to be written down and included. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage.
Yeah, and the way we develop those a lot is our volunteers, when we're training them, are taking notes. And we're like, can we borrow your notes? Because there it is, in their own language. It's excellent, you know. And it doesn't take much work for you to collect a couple of these together, edit it together, and it's done. And the idea is not, you know, is to publish it and hand it to somebody after things have been worked out. I mean, it's tough to, if technology changes, your instructions are wasted, but... Yeah, I think it's worthwhile at this point, you know, to be able to hand somebody something. It's like, study this after we show it to you. It'll make a lot of sense. Or study it before we show it to you. It'll help you to learn more from the demo and the hands-on.
And just one note, and that certainly is not to replace the actual, you know, person-to-person.
Yeah.
Visual.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to go back just for a moment to this... passion that I felt among everyone about this issue of objectivity and bias. And I think that in itself is a local news story and a global news story. And it has to do with corporate media and the dominance of corporate media in any local city or town and the dominance of it nationally. And it sets national and international agendas for what we should be or shouldn't be paying attention to. And I think part of the reason that there can be so much passion and so many different viewpoints about this is we've all been subject to the assumption, and I think it's been carefully cultivated by corporate media and marketers and advertisers, that objectivity means a paid staff person working for a corporation providing the viewpoints, perspectives, and information from... paid experts, government authorities, and corporate spokespeople. That looks official or authentic or authoritative. And we have all been, all of us, I feel it in myself, so trained, so numbed by the repeated hearing that again and again since childhood, that those authorities are the ones who set the agenda and they're talking about quote-unquote reality. And we all know that's not true, and it's so frustrating. I think it's a local... news story, and it's a step forward every time in one of our local broadcasts or stories, every time we simply state in one sentence or whatever it takes a disclaimer like, I am a member of the custodians union, and this is the information that I'm reporting. And incidentally, the Boston Globe did not report this, and that reporter is an employee of a union-busting company, or whatever it is that identifies the difference. And every time that happens, that's educating the public and the listeners and the readers that there is a distinction, and that thinking about different perspectives and thinking about bias. And like someone said, every time anyone who has an interest in an issue or a story is necessarily biased, and I agree. I just think that corporate media outlets all have an interest in the perpetuation of corporate media as a model to disseminate information for a democracy. I think the public, people everywhere around the world and in this country are all aware, maybe more aware than ever before in history, of issues about media and the hegemony of corporate media as the information that we're supposed to use to conduct a democracy. It could be a glut, but I think more people than ever are aware that there are problems, that something's wrong, and you're not going to find corporate media playing to that interest, but we can play to that interest, and we can tell people and give them suggestions about what's wrong, and every time that we're doing a local story, it's an opportunity and it's an advertisement for what independent media is, and you can invite people to get involved every time you do that.
No disrespect.
Yeah. Thanks. There's a bunch of hands.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to challenge you on what you said because it's one thing to... I helped found the Independent Media Center in Urbana, and then I became a city council member. And so actually it's not an independent media center anymore. And I have a real conflict on that issue because I'm now the government official that people come to, that the mainstream news comes to get sources.
Is that bad?
It's an interesting conflict that maybe fleshes out, the story of this may flesh out some of the issues, much like the janitor story does, where we say we're independent media, but I have this really strange relationship where I can't really report on the local news as a reporter, or I feel like I can't because I started out as an activist. I'm totally involved in the community. That's why I got elected, is because I'm involved in the community. But then when someone claims harassment, they got fired because they're a lesbian at the local hospital, I know that in 6 months I'm going to make a decision based on that case. And if I report on the case, then I can't be one of the majority votes, which we need on the case. So I got to keep my mouth shut to make sure that it's not considered a conflict of interest, and yet I'm on the campaign for this woman who got fired because I'm part of the lesbian community there. So there's all this tangle, and what I found, the way that I've handled it personally, is that I report on global issues, I report for FSRN, I try to focus on national things, and then I feed local stories and insider knowledge to the Independent Media Center. And I love speaking to journalist students because they always come up to me, Ms. Chenoweth, Alderperson Chenoweth, could I have a moment of your time? No one ever talked to me that way before. Could I have a moment of your time? Yes, of course you can. Well, I was just wondering if you could comment on the, on whether or not you like red or blue better. And then I'd say, well, I'm happy to tell you I actually like purple, but that's not really the story. You know where the story is, and I'd like pump them, like, you should do a story on this, and did you know about that, and did you know that, Clint Atkins, motherfucker who, owns $10 million of property south of Urbana, is trying to get the city to give him free ride, and you need to look into this because, I can't look into it. So it's this really interesting thing where I'm both inside and outside, and I play this role, and if I even have a pen name when things get really tricky and I have to do a story because I'm going to, bust if I don't do this local story and no one else is doing it, I have a pen name that I won't tell you,
That's not disclosure.
That I'll put out stories as, because I just can't, there's this conflict of interest issue. And I guess that's the same thing. Activists should be government officials, even though they're oftentimes wary of government officials. They should be. That's why I became a government official. And government officials who have been activists have some of the best knowledge about stories to write. So, I don't know. I think it's an interesting...
Well, I just want to applaud you for just having the ethics to think about what you're doing
and to
take action you're taking constructive action. You don't have to be tied in knots. And every time even if you reported on something related to the city council, business before the city council, you have the opportunity to set an example for other news reporters, and more importantly, just set an example to the public for what reporters should say when they're in that position, which is just a simple thing like from fairness and accuracy in reporting, which is in the interest of full disclosure, dot, dot, dot. In the interest of full disclosure, I happen to sit in the city council, I care about these issues, and this is what I have to say about it. How many times do you ever hear or read in print a Wall Street Journal reporter or a New York Times reporter or your local TV station anchor saying, oh, in the interest of full disclosure, I happen to own stock in this company, and my brother's executive vice president is my friend and the co-owner of this business. You don't hear that. But every time it builds in the public awareness that that's what would make sense for an ethical journalist.
I think you should lose the pen name.
I have a quick question, and this is somewhat theoretical. You do not have to answer. You're under no obligation to answer. You need to make a decision vis-a-vis this case you were mentioning.
Which is something that's about to come up. Yeah.
Now, you need to do research, right? You need to talk to people, get different opinions. And you need to do research so that you can form your opinion and make a decision. What's the difference between doing that and going around with a tape recorder and a microphone, let's say, and asking questions, the same questions you would ask, but you're recording the questions. And you could take the responses and turn that into a story about this issue.
The question is whether or not I would give the tape report. I do that. I do it all the time because I can talk to the CEO of the hospital because he'll talk to me because I'm on city council and he wants my vote. So I can go in and I can get access to places that other people can't, and I'll bring in a tape recorder or I'll say this, you know, or usually in that case I wouldn't bring in a tape recorder at the end of my talk. I would write down everything he said. But and then I would give that to another journalist and say, don't tell him I gave it.
But I would suggest that your honesty cannot be questioned based on whether or not that research that you did in order to make your decision turns into a news radio story.
It's really tricky because as a city council member, I'm under the same the public, which has been told that journalists are unbiased, has also been told, well, politicians aren't unbiased, but when it comes to making a decision, they can't be activists. That's something in the world, the public world, I don't understand, but that people generally accept that it's okay to be out there and have been an advocate in certain things, but if you're an activist, actively lobbying for queer rights, which I've done for 15 years, for some reason now, I can't be intimately involved in making sure that this woman, you know, basically organizing her fundraiser, which I did last week. You know, I mean, doing that and then adjudicating on it.
But constituents, I agree with you, but I don't understand it, because constituents go to politicians all the time and say, advocate for me. It happens, that's what politics is.
I would also just like to say that you, in addition to the concept of disclosure, which you don't achieve with your pen name, you might consider the concept of equal time. There's someone else on your city council who has a different opinion than you have, and train them to use a tape recorder or tape them as make them feel comfortable on the air as well and have them get into it with you.
How much access you're giving your constituency to their government officials. Mm-hmm. Suddenly these government officials carry around tape recorders, record all their conversations, and then put them on the radio for us to listen to.
One thing, though.
That's really what's going on.
What a concept.
Hell yeah, it's activists. Hell yeah, we're replacing our government with real fucking democracy.
You know,
Direct democracy.
Just like you have your Carl Bernstein quote about the best possible version, of the truth. One thing that I think I actually learned this in eighth grade from an English teacher, but he said there is no such thing as objectivity. Mm-hmm. You're wasting your time trying to achieve it.
Yeah,
what you want to achieve is fairness, and that means giving a chance to whatever other side or sides there may be. It's a lot of work. It has to do with the concept of equal time, but that's worth going for. Objectivity, forget it.
And there's a, in relation to this question about objectivity and bias, I think there's a great news story that I guarantee will apply to every one of your cities and stations and news outlets. And it's just a simple question. Who are the biggest, most powerful activists in your city or in this country or in the world? they're the transnational corporations, 8 or 10 or so of which are larger than I think 100 countries in the world, over 100 countries in the world. They happen to they and those. That's activism. When they go to politicians to get what they want done, when they put advertisements on television to talk about their interests, when they have not just one, but a whole phalanx of media specialists devoted to fanning out and getting coverage in every newspaper and television channel, they are the activists. They are the biased ones. They're the ones who have a lack of objectivity. And they're just, we're talking about the richest 1% of people in institutions who own 40% of the wealth, or the richest 5% who own like 65% of the wealth. Well, there's a huge story about democracy right there. How can we as citizen journalists, as community members, how can you call it bias when we're 80% of the population, you know, and our story isn't getting told as much? I think it takes a lot of education. That's really counterintuitive. It took me a long time to even be able to say those words and think that way. But I think that's a story that bears repeating and a theme that bears work and repeating in everything we do, and it will gradually educate listeners to that reality that's there.
I thought your original question was really interesting, which is how can we have this show up as a story? A story of what we're really doing. And I think what underlies that, in my observation anyway, is that a lot of people, myself sometimes, you know, I face it and I observe it, is a lot of resignation and cynicism about everything. And that relates to the fact that people don't feel like they're ever heard. They don't feel like anything that they do with their voice has any impact on anybody. And this, any organization that we represent provides that. We provide voice for the voiceless, and that is the story. And especially in relation to being on the city council, I mean, what is a politician? What is somebody who represents the people? What are they representing? They're representing the voice of the populace. And so it really ties together those two roles beautifully.
I think we should continue this discussion throughout the whole weekend and bring all this enthusiasm to the rest of the conference. And it's 3:30 and the other panels are starting right now, but I'm so glad that you all made this a success by contributing and staying and having all these ideas.
Thank you very much.
Very casual, too.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be
wrong. Oh, no, you weren't at all. Not at all.
Chime in.
Thanks for saying what you said.
Do you have a card, by the way?
I wish I did, but I can write down my...